Drunk on Comics Special Edition. Interviews from C2E2 2015, Round 3. This last batch from the con floor includes Bill Willingham, James Maddox, Nick Filardi, and Jenny Friesen. We hope you enjoy. So we're back on the convention floor with the fabled Bill Willingham.
What you did there.
Yeah.
How's it going, Bill?
It's going terrific. This is a wonderful show, and I'm wonderful at it.
So I'm going to let Tony go on this because he could probably talk forever on fables.
And yes, and we had the pleasure to meet you back in, last summer in Grand Rapids, Michigan. What was the shop?
Kirby's Hardy's Collector's Corner.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And at the time, you were a little busy doing signings, which you still are here, but we just so happened to be able to see you, and so we could connect and finally do this interview that I've wanted to do since last summer.
Well, I appreciate it, and I've studied all my lines, and I've researched everything so I can, you know, maybe answer one, maybe two questions.
Your check cash, so we will ask you those questions you want us to ask you. So.
You bet.
You know, actually, come to think of it, I saw you on the national news.
For the Amtrak residency thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I told you about that. I just remembered. Bill, can you fill people in on what that was?
Amtrak, as you know, which is our American passenger rail line, had this idea. It was presented to them by someone to, you know, why don't they do residency programs the way certain colleges and retreats and things like that do residencies, because so many people, so many writers do write on the train. It's a wonderful place to write. And he just mentioned this offhand in a tweet, and Amtrak saw it and said, that is a great idea. Let's do a residency program. So they did this big contest where they had people submit a sample of their work and a little, like, you know, this is who I am and this is why I would benefit from being an Amtrak resident. And of the 16,000 entries, they picked, 10?
Yeah, it wasn't a whole
lot. No, 12, because it's one a month for a year.
Was
it 24? Was it two a month for a year?
It's 24 writers.
24 writers, so two a month for 1 year to actually get residencies. And what it means is you get on an Amtrak train, starting from wherever you live, and then you go wherever you want to go and come back from wherever you wanted to go with a sleeper car and all that kind of stuff, and you can ride on the train and all that, and it was just a great thing. And I got to be the first one, so being first, then I got to do a lot of interviews and things like that, which cut into my writing time. But that was fine because it was great, but just the joy I love taking trains to anywhere. It's just, in my old foginess, that's the exotic aspect of travel. Getting on a plane is sort of functional, get it done. A train means you have some time to get there, so this must be fun travel and all that. Anyway, I slept in my sleeper. I wrote here and there. I wrote in the dining car. I wrote in my cabin. I wrote, you know, in the observation deck and whatever, and had just a wonderful time. Amtrak picked up the bill.
It was great because I'm sitting there watching the news one night, and all of a sudden I see you pop up there. And I'm like, that's awesome, because not only are you getting to do this, but I thought it was cool that a comic book, you know, somebody that writes comic books, actually was getting national attention for the writing, which a lot of times, you know, the comics don't seem to get the same attention that everything else does. So.
Well, and it probably wouldn't have done that at all had we not, been recently. Comics are gaining acceptance as like real work now.
Absolutely.
And so that we're going to have a slight pause.
Yep.
While we sign some funny books. We're back.
And going back to, the final hour, Fables is ending.
Yes.
Why?
Because it was time. Interestingly enough, it happened kind of ass backwards, cart before the horse, wherein I imagine the usual thing when someone wraps up a long-running series is you know that it's ending, so you work out what is the big final story worth ending it for. But in this case, it happened that we were plotting out the what is now the final story, and in the process of plotting that out, trying to make it big and important or whatever, we realized, oh, well, this kind of, because of the thing we want to do, this kind of really is the last story. And it sort of dawned on me and Mark Buckingham, over time, and finally about 2 years ago at the Baltimore comic show, we faced back and said, yeah, I think we're ending. So, and later on, we told Shelley Bond, the editor, the secret to doing a good long-running series is you and your artist keep stuff from your editor as long as possible. they only, you know, could find ways to fix it or interfere with it. Yeah, so keep them in the dark if you can.
I've been loving that you've been having, because there's just so much story, so much that has gone on in the series that even now I'm like, there's still so many plot lines that are going on that I hope it all wraps up. I don't want to be left with anything. But then I also say, but I'm okay with that because what I have been reading is just amazing. But I've especially been loving those small little, like, two-page story arcs for some of the random stories that I've forgotten about.
Right.
The Blue Ox, that was hilarious. Even having Jack come back.
Jack's ghost came back.
Yes.
For a
and
bit.
How that series ended was also threw me for a loop. Like, I just have to say, I don't know where you get all your inspiration from, but I would love to see what's in that head.
Various places. With Jack, Matt Sturgis and I wrote Jack of Fables together. And what we did mostly was challenging each other to come up with something so rude or awful or scary that we wonder if we should do it. And that was became our template, is if we end up asking each other, dare we do this? Then we usually went ahead and did it. And some of it was just in such poor taste. But that was Jack. He was the in such poor taste character. Ending that, you referenced, you know, the way it ended. Both Matt and I like Shakespeare, and we love the fact that one of the things Shakespeare would do is near the end of a play, when it's time to wrap up, he'd just find reasons for everyone to come out on stage and die. Sometimes it in dozens. So we decided to go for a Shakespearean ending where every single person who was in Jack of Fables died. Except for we didn't. Babe the Blue Ox survived and maybe one or two others. Oh, old Sam survived. So with Fables ending, the one absolute thing I promised when it was announced is that not everyone would die. So as long as I held on to one character and let him live, I'm keeping that promise. You know, not everyone's dying. But the short stories, and this is one of the things you asked, like, how will he be able to wrap up all that stuff? Well, part of it is to look at every important character and say, okay, what is the dangling story there? And let's wrap it up. So the last issue has this huge main story with me and Mark Buckingham wrapping up the whole struggle between Snow White and Rose Red. But a lot of smaller stories done by a plethora of terrific artists that is the last story of, and then fill in the character. The last lake story, Lady of the Lake, who was introduced recently, introduced in a two-parter drawn by Gene Haw. So, of course, Gene Haw. Say hi, Gene.
Hi,
Gene. I get that. You can't have hi, Gene. We got all your water. Yeah. Anyway. He came back to illustrate the last lake story for it, and we have a few surprise wonderful artists. But every character that I basically made a list of everyone who's ever been in Fables and prioritized them and then went down the list and we did last stories of for each one until we just ran out of pages. It doesn't wrap up every single thing with every character in the sense that you don't get to know every day they've lived, you know, since the series ends. But the important stuff, I think we tied up pretty nicely. Okay.
So with that, the series ending, do you have any other works that you're starting on, new projects that may be coming out soon?
Yes.
That you can talk about?
No.
I
actually do have one that I can talk about. I'm doing a lot of different comic projects that are not 150-page issue epics. I'm going to do some shorter things for a while just to sort of like, you know, cleanse the palate. One of them is, I don't know if you saw, I think it was a 7-issue, Legendary with Dynamite.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of characters, you know, in a steampunk version. I'm doing another one of those.
Okay.
And that's the one I can talk about. Although I really should think about actually writing it first before I really talk about it. And some other things, a couple of which we're even still looking for the right artist for. But there are new things coming out comic-wise. Plus, Fables was very time-intensive. And so things like, I've been working on novels the entire time. I love writing novels, too. And some of those have been backing up now because writing a novel is not the most intensive part. Like, the whole process of getting it published, edited, rewritten, etc. Those things take time. So I've got about 4 of them in the pipeline that I'm going to start making sure they can get out now. So basically, I don't get to relax much at all.
So since you have this finite ending, do you ever feel like you may want to come back, maybe tell some stories through prose, like book form, anything, maybe earlier tales, or is this going to be it for you for done for Fables?
I have learned, my agent is Neil Gaiman's lawyer. So we see of or hear of each other a lot through that common friend. And so he told me to say this: when you're asked about will you come back and do Fables, don't pull a Neil Gaiman and say, that's it, I'm done. And then a few years later find out, oh, well, actually, there is an idea for another film. So never say never. That said, if issue 150 is the last ever comment on Fables ever, I think I've done a good last issue with that in mind.
Excellent. Now, for fans that may want to get a hold of you, are you on Twitter? You got a Facebook page? Are you out on the internet?
I am on Twitter. I think I have a Facebook page, but I don't know how to navigate Facebook, so I never visit it. But I'm on Twitter. It's short. It's to the point. I know how to do that because I'm an old man. My memory is short and to the point. It's at Bill Willingham, all one word, if you want to see me on Twitter, and I will opine. The nice thing about Twitter is, comic writers are the best Twitterers ever because we are already used to having to put everything in very short statements. I mean, comic writing, word balloons and things, do not allow a lot of room for just running on and running on and running on, short and to the point. Everyone else went to Twitter and says, oh, they sure don't let us say much here. And every comic writer looked and said, ooh, there's so much room to say. Anyway, so that's why I think I'm comfortable and at home on Twitter.
Well, thank you so much for all the work you've done. Looking forward to the end. And listeners...
Why, didn't you like it? You're looking forward to the end?
Like, I'm looking forward to...
What a terrible thing to say. Jeez.
I guarantee he's going to be crying.
Yeah, right. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
I had no plan to...
All right, we are here now with Nick Filardi. So, Nick, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Show's going well.
Yeah?
Yep.
It's you kind of snuck up on us. We're kind of walking around, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, cool, let's go check out his stuff. Come to find out, you've worked on one of the favorite books from at least 2 of the 4 other guys on our show. Which
only
is
2 of the 4?
Well,
who are these other guys?
Well, I'm one.
Yeah.
Tony is not one. He liked it, but it wasn't up at the favorites level.
Have you been reading Brides?
No, my brother has those. So I have them all. I just haven't read them yet.
Helheim kind of like lays the foundation, and Brides continues to expand on it. By the end of Brides, when we come out with the second trade, pick that up because we're working on. issue 6 right now. I have about the first half from Joel. And when we collect it all, you should definitely check that out. And we have tentative plans for a third trade as well, so we're going to see what happens, where everyone's schedule shakes out at. If we can make that happen, too. You know.
So actually, let's start with Helheim.
Okay.
Explain your process for coloring. I mean, I'm assuming, like everyone else, at this day and age, everything's digital for you.
Yeah, everything's 100% digital. When I got pages for the pitch, you know, I did a bunch of samples with a bunch of other colorists, and the direction that I got was, you know the old movie, I think it's like early 90s, late 80s, Excalibur.
Yes.
And everything's kind of like this mystical, glowy thing they were doing in cinema. Like, it was just kind of like a little ethereal. They wanted something like that. So with Helheim, I'm working 100% digital, and I'm trying to do colors that are a little outside the comfort zone. So it's a lot of like blue fire, green fire, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like things that, you know, most colorists would go one way. I'm trying to go the other, and in a subtle way where, you know, it's not like the whole issue's, you know, pink or whatever, you know. But so with Helheim, the first trade, I was just kind of like trying to set up a style for Joelle. It's the first time I was coloring her, so I was trying to roll with her punches and, you know, like try to figure out the best way to handle everything. And then with Brides, I actually went further. I noticed that Cullen, I read his Magneto run, and I noticed that he paces the story out very, very deliberately. And it builds in a very, very nice way, in a slow way where, you know, like every issue counts for something. And so with Brides, I was like, all right, maybe we can do that with the color. So each issue, especially in the first 4, has like its own kind of scheme, and it starts like pretty green, and like as it gets more and more intense, it ebbs into red until issue 4 has this like moment in it. I don't want to spoil it, but issue 4 has this incredible moment in it that kind of peaks and then kind of like takes a duck down in issue 5 and then ramps up again for issue 6. So I wanted the coloring to kind of like reflect that intensity and those storytelling elements. So maybe with Brides, you'll come around to our side.
Now, I want to go into Mute Animals.
Wait. Before we do, I got to back.
Well, no, because I want to talk about what I want to talk about.
but we aren't done with Helheim yet.
Okay.
What's it like working with... I mean, Cullen Bunn is an amazing writer who is doing so much. And Joel Jones has some of the most beautiful artwork I've seen out there right now.
No joke. Joel Jones is going to be a superstar. Like, I've done a handful of other things. I did a Batgirl 66 thing. I did an Adventures of Superman thing with her. She can do it all. She's fantastic.
Well, and like,
Lady Killer right now is just starting to explode. And this is the reason I was like, we'll see what happens with schedules, is because I feel like Joel Jones is kind of ebbing into the superstar territory. And,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if Vertigo's going to start snatching her up or, you know, like, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And she's also, like, God bless her, she's, like, busting her butt, like, trying to get Lady Killer out on time and Helheim done on time. And, like, you know, she loves doing comics. And you can tell. You can tell in her work. So she's fantastic, and I will work with her as long as she lets me, you know? And Cullen's the same way. Like, Cullen, I was a fan of Cullen's from the Six Gun before I even met Cullen, and I'm happy to work on anything he's doing. And it's the same thing with, you know, Mike Oeming with Victories and Bendis with Powers. And, like, I like working with... When you start with a good foundation with a writer... It makes everyone's job easier. Like, not only is it just a pencil or inker, but, like, the storytelling, if it's easy for them, it's going to be easy for me, so.
All right, now, go ahead, Tony. Sorry, I had to finish. I had to finish on Helheim. I was... it's its own thing.
What I wanted to ask is, what's it like to be working on something that's so treasured from childhood?
Oh, first of all, I'm about to... my mother came up to visit me, and she brought a bunch of old artwork, and I pulled out a poster-sized Raphael that I drew when I was 7 years old. And I started at the top and kind of, like, couldn't really proportion the page, you know, like a 7-year-old does. So as he goes
Or a 37-year-old.
Yeah. So as I was like drawing him down, he's getting stubbier and stubbier, so I could fit him on the page. So he's got these like weird little legs. It's very strange, and these gigantic size in him. Very strange, but yeah. So Ninja Turtles was one of my bucket list properties I wanted to do. Like, I have a handful of bucket list stuff that I want to work on before, you know, like whenever I you know, am found out that, you know, this is a dream job and that, you know, they should give it to somebody else.
So you're not going to tell us what those are, is what you're saying?
The bucket list?
Yeah.
I can give you a few. I'd love to work on some Dead Man. But
okay.
I feel like Dead Man, for whatever reason, is a hard sell. Like, he was in, just recently in Dark Avenger, or Dark Justice League, or...
Justice League Dark.
But, you know, when he does his own books, like, they just don't sell very well.
Yeah, he's more of a team, well, yeah.
He's a team player. Yeah. But I just, the idea of, like, this dead Bostonian, like... being like, now I'm dead and I got superpowers, and he's like involved in all these mystical things, but he's also kind of a meathead. Like, I think he's pretty fantastic, you know? So, I don't know. Once he gets his own movie, which I'm also pushing for, then we'll see. But, yeah, so when I started working on Ninja Turtles, not only was it a dream job for the IP, but it was a dream job because I've been trying to work with Andy Kuhn for like the last 10 years. So, like, when he came to me and he was like, hey, I'm working on this book, you know, it was a no-brainer. Like, I was like, you guys don't have to pay me. Just let's just do this thing, you know? So, very excited.
Now, when were you approached specifically for the Mute Animals, or did you just know it's a Ninja Turtles project and that's what you then you know what it was?
It was specifically this. They let me know everything in advance. I did the cover for issue 1 and they loved it, and we just went from there. So.
Okay, now you said when you were a kid you used to draw.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you probably still draw today.
Yeah.
How'd you pick colors, or did colors pick you?
The way it worked out was, I got out of school with about $85,000 in student loans, and I was like, what are my most marketable abilities? I need money right the hell now. And it was coloring. Like, my palette was always, like, far, far better than my pencils or my inks or whatever. And the stuff that I'm making, that I made in college, was not, like, marketable. It wasn't... the Superman kind of, you know, Marvel DC style. It was more like I doodled a zine about how I look bad in hats. And, like, this isn't really, like, for anyone, and I would not expect anyone to buy this, you know?
Except for people that really like hats.
Yeah. Very all different kinds. I did another zine about, like, these two goat cowboys who decide to go chase the chupacabra in the Mexican desert. You know?
See, now, I'd be down with that. Granted, I drink a lot, but come on, that sounds like that's
next time. Next time I get around a photocopier, I'll send you a copy of it.
Perfect.
But yeah, at the time, I was like, this is fun, but it's not really making money, and I needed to pay bills immediately, you know? So that's kind of how I fell into it. But it was deceptive because even though I was better at coloring, it was still a long road, you know? It was a solid 4 years before I felt like I was getting a page rate that was making me comfortable, and I was able to, like, pay all of my bills on time and hit it. It was Powers. When I started Powers, I literally jumped for joy in my apartment. I had done one book with Mike Oeming before, and so we were buds, and he called me, and he's like, yeah, you want to do Powers? And I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. And I hung up the phone and was literally jumping for joy.
Did you have that 80s, like, freeze frame at the end of the show?
It was absolutely that, yeah. Like, legs all the way up in the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
Phone clutched in triumph. You know? Yeah, yeah.
And then the credits.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, are you... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, now, average... How long does it take you to do a page?
It really, really varies.
I knew you were going to say it like, varies, but like...
Okay, so let me give you an example. I'm doing Dark Tower right now.
Which one?
The one with Peter Kowalski.
Okay, is it the new Drawing of the
it's
Three
It's the new
one?
Stuff. Yeah. Drawing of the Three.
Yeah.
His stuff is hyper detailed. And he is also... He is just as detail-oriented as his artwork is.
Is that the one... I don't mean to interrupt. Is that the one that, like, issue one came out, like, about maybe three-ish weeks ago?
I believe so.
Yes, but it's issue one of the second arc, and they
right.
go together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I read that one. Good book.
So he's just as detail-oriented as he is, as you would assume from looking at his art. So he doesn't let me get away with anything. Like,
yeah.
I cut a corner, he's, like, aware. You know, he's like... He'll send me notes back that are like, all the books are the same color on this bookshelf in the background. Do you think we can put six or seven different colors in there? And I'm like, oh, my God, yes, I guess. And, you know, the books are like 3 pixels wide, you know. Like, he's right, and I shouldn't, you know, cut those corners. But, you know, like those pages, because I can't cut those corners because he's so detail-oriented, like I can do maybe... 4 a day comfortably. When I work with Mike Oeming on something like Powers, a book I've been doing for a long time, but like a guy that I'm like very comfortable with his art. I've done like not only have I done Powers, but I've done like Victories. I've done Cross Bronx with Ivan Brandon. You know, it's like second nature. I bang those pages out pretty quickly. So Powers usually takes me about 3 to 4 days to do, and it's usually over the 22 limit, and I like don't break a sweat.
Yeah. Now, are you one of these colorists where you alter your style for every book and artist?
I try to.
Because I mean, there are some out there that, like, I mean, Jordi Belair, who I absolutely love her work.
Yeah.
You can definitely see her signature on pages.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just kind of curious if you try and, like, fluctuate.
I mean, Jordi changes it up, too, to a degree. You know, like, she does a good job of matching what she needs to do for the art to best complement it.
Correct.
Like, everybody leaves a little bit of themselves down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't totally, like, 180 change. But like, we're doing Cullen and... Drew Moss and I are doing a Blood Feud that's coming out through Oni,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to look very different from Helheim. You know, even though it's still a Cullen Bunn book and it's still like kind of paced the same, Drew's drawing is a little more chunkier than Joel's, and it's a little more heavy with spot blacks, and it's also like a different tone book.
Okay.
And so I'm going to try to give it like a very, very limited palette, and kind of like invoke like old horror like genre kind of stuff. So, which is kind of different from Helheim, because Helheim, I'm just like, all right, how do I make it bombastic but weird and like sprinkle it with blood? You know, like, so it's like two different mentalities. And then, you know, you look at Powers, and it's like, Powers has a distinct style, and I stepped into that book with a distinct style. You know, like, I had to kind of match it. And the first issues that no one should look up that I did for Powers, like, were a little rocky in the beginning because I, you know, not only was I far less experienced than I am now, but, like, I was stepping into somebody else's work. So they were like, can you match it, but also do your own thing? And then, you know, Bendis, when he writes something, he has a distinct vision.
Mm-hmm.
And he will let you know. But, you know, like, I've never grown so much than, like, from, like, his notes. He will let you know, like, if something's not working. And so now it's gotten to the point where he's letting me know so many times that I've grown enough as an artist that, like, now I finish a book and he's like, it looks great. You know, you knocked it out of the park. So
what would you say your signature is?
God,
on the page then.
I don't know. I feel like I get stuck in ruts for a little while. Like, I try things out, and then once I get it going, like, to the way I like it, I'm like, okay, that's done, and then kind of move on. I was doing a lot of these, like, watercolory textures and, like, smoke and stuff like that I didn't see a whole lot of people doing at the time. And now I've kind of like moved. I don't know if you've seen Mutanimal stuff, but it's got kind of this like chunky, like almost like Cranish mark making going on, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm like getting into now. So to answer your question, I have no idea. Like, I, you know, as long as this is the thing, as long as the comic looks as good as I can make it look at the end of the day, like, that's all I care about, you know. So
well, last question that I have for you, I can't stop staring at those amazing tattoos you have.
Oh yeah, I have the sword on one arm and the boomerang in the A button and B button for the Legend of Zelda. It's from the inventory from the very first Legend of Zelda.
Yes, and I would have to say those were the two that were most commonly used all the time.
Yeah.
So good choice.
You know, it's funny. Whenever I have the boomerang on my right arm. And whenever I hand somebody something, they'll see it and they'll be like, "Oh, and you must really like bananas." And I'm like, "Oh, no, it's The Legend of Zelda." I also got once I got, "No, it's The Legend of Zelda," and the kid was like, "Is that a frat?" Or, I was like, No,
it's an anorexic Pac-Man.
Yeah. There you go. I haven't gotten that before.
Yeah. So, Nick, awesome. Thanks for chatting. Where should people go to find you online?
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm actually slowly trying to overtake my local newscaster and followers. So please follow me on Twitter, because once I get close, I'm going to start calling them out. It's going to be great. It's at Nick Phil, NickFil. And there's a link to my Tumblr on my Twitter page.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, and can't wait to see what more good stuff's coming out of you.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. I was asked by my recording. Yep. All right.
Hi. My name is James Maddox.
It may or may not be after party time, guys. And it's just Derek here solo. Tony is off. Party in a whole other sense, and we might hear about that later. We might not.
Ooh, intriguing.
Ooh. Yeah.
Way to tease a future segment, man.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. We just tease. We
don't. There's actually no like actual content. It's just a bunch of promo.
Well, yeah, we teases.
Yeah, we don't please. We just tease. That's what we do with Drunk on Comics. So, guys, I'm here with James Maddox and Rob Dumo. So, guys, welcome to the show. James, I've talked about your stuff a couple times on the show.
Yes, I appreciate that.
And Rob, I'm familiar with your stuff, but we haven't actually talked about it, so we're taking the advantage now. So let's talk first about the most current project you guys are working on.
I have a Woodford Reserve. It's really good. And I'm working on that. I'm working on emptying that one so I can start another one here in just a little bit.
You know what's funny is I'm actually working on a Hams.
Oh, and I like that. I got one of those flasks. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the Ink Whiskey guys. They're our sponsor.
Oh yeah.
And we love these guys.
Yeah.
And in my Ink Whiskey flask, I have some Crown. So I'm gonna be working on that shortly too.
Excellent.
And Rob's empty handed.
I am. I'm done for the night.
Amateur.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, so I am actually working on a number of self-published and also published works with Broken Icon Comics. Rob and I just came out with a book called The Eccentrics that is kind of like a goofy superhero story.
Okay.
Rob came up with a character back when he was like, what, middle school?
Yeah, probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, so it's basically a stick man in a muscle suit. No lie. And so
you just wanted the easy way out on drawing? Is that what this comes out with?
Pretty much. Yeah. I pretty much just couldn't draw faces. So I was like, I'm just going to put a stick person in here and, draw some, fun muscles.
We actually tried to make that the title, Fun Muscles.
Yeah, I think that's going to lead people in the wrong direction. Yeah. It's a fun muscle.
We're gonna have to put that in the book somewhere.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, we just did it. It's really a self-contained book. And I like doing self-contained because as an indie publisher, you get issue one. You never know when you're going to see the person again to get issue two
right.
or three or whatever. And we're going to have it up on Comixology and all that. But I like delivering the self-contained story. So you're looking at like a 32-page self-contained superhero story because I've never written a superhero book. Rob loves drawing superheroes. So we kind of collaborated on this.
Figures.
Even if they're stick figures. Especially
if they're stick figures.
Yeah. So outside of that, I've got a self-published book called Clown, which is doing awesome.
Which was absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much.
That's one of those books that not only stuck with me but fucked with me. And that's a good
awesome.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing to hear, though.
Yeah.
I've also got a miniseries called The Dead I'm doing with Jen Hickman. And that's issue 5. This will probably come out later, but issue 5 is coming out on Comixology this coming Wednesday.
All right.
And we just wrapped up the horror show. It's a 3-issue mini. I mean, seriously, I've got books for days.
You are like the majority of the rest of the writers that I've talked to that... 8 to 12 projects just doesn't seem like quite enough. I need 15 to 20 so I can feel like I'm just making the grade. Is it that kind of thing?
I guess. I don't know. I like to write. I find that writing comic scripts, I can do it very fast. And the stories that I tell, I try to be diverse as I can be. You know, and we have a good time with it. There's a new book I got coming out called Arkham Pulp, which is basically like if you mixed a bank heist with, you know, in a Lovecraftian world, you know. So you'll find that a lot of it does fall into the horror science fiction genre, but stuff like Clown, you know, that's a bit of a step outside of what you
Clown. I don't even know how you'd classify it.
I don't try. I'm just like, it's not a creepy clown book. That's my pitch.
But it's still a little creepy, but not creepy clown.
Yeah, it's not like horror slasher clown.
Right.
You know?
I don't deal with that so well.
We all float down here.
That kind of, I try to stay away from that as much as possible.
Yeah. So now let's talk a little bit about, you know, about the Eccentrics.
Sure.
When it comes to you guys working together, I mean, like, how are you both sitting down saying, okay, here's the story, or James, is it just you coming up with it, or Rob, how involved are you in the script and story itself?
This was actually a really, like, different take, because Rob had a set cast of characters that he kind of gave over to me, and then I just did my thing with them.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I was doing everything from scratch, which is normally the case.
Right.
Yeah, I've got more, like, background stories on the characters, you know, possibilities for where they could go or drives and things like that. And, you know, pretty much took, you know, that baby that was gestating inside my head and told James to give it life.
Yeah.
So you're like the surrogate.
Yeah.
So, all right, now, James, when you're writing a script, how detailed are you?
I am extremely detailed. I can't, like, here's the thing. I come from, like, a journalist background, and for me, like, as a journalist, when I was doing interviews and stuff like that, I would get as much content as I could, and then I would pick through the relevant parts and put it onto the page in an article that people would fawn over, I think is the term. You know, they would just love the shit out of it. That would be relevant to the story, right? So I try to approach comics the same way, whereas I write the story as detailed as I can. And then I give it to an artist, and if they use those details, that's fantastic because they're there. If they choose not to and go different directions, that's fine because they're using what's important to be on the page.
So, like with the Eccentrics, you know, you've got your script, you hand it over to Rob. Rob, are you going back to James and saying, "Hey, look, here's what you went with, but here's where I'm going," or do you just hand him the page back and go, "Here you go, I'm done"?
A little bit, you know. I mean, there's a little bit back and forth where, you know, I come up with ideas for, you know, possible things that could happen or possible things to include in the script that he's already come up with, and then we see, you know, bounce the ideas off of each other, see what's going to work, what's not going to work.
Yeah, because that's the best part about comics is it's like truly a collaboration.
Yeah, definitely teamwork on this.
Especially like with indie comics, I don't have to go through an editor. I have the straightforward contact because I know a lot of my writer friends, they'll go through the editor. In some cases, they'll never actually meet their artist.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a straight business transaction, you know?
Yeah. Now, I haven't got to see the book yet, so I'm just like our listeners where, you know, I'm the guy who wants to see. So, Rob, kind of fill me in on your style and the look of the book.
Well, I guess my style is kind of... Little bit of exaggerated cartoony, but not, you know, super far end cartoony or anything. It's not super detailed crazy, you know, Jim Lee kind of detailed stuff. Right. But maybe not as cartoony as, like, a Madrera.
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. Kind of in between, because I've had influences from both sides
sure.
of that coin.
Are you a little bit more of a cleaner style, a little bit more rounded off, or are you a little bit more scratchy, edgy, jagged?
It's really interesting because Nick Wentland is our colorist, right?
Okay.
And Rob went straight from his pencils to the coloring process.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so his pencils are, like, really, really tight. There's no extraneous, you know, stray marks in the art.
That says a lot, yeah. right there.
Yeah.
That really does. So,
well, and it works well because again, you know, he likes drawing superheroes. That clean style works with that genre,
yes.
or that medium. You know, to the point where Daniel Way and him just got together. He's doing a book with Daniel Way because he saw the work that he was doing with, you know, the Eccentrics pages and the book that we did before that, Nightmare Unknown, and really liked his style and fit it into the story that they just... Is it still on Kickstarter?
Yeah, we've got about 2 weeks left.
Okay, yeah, so people should be able to still find this by the time we put this up. So
yeah.
Okay, so people want to go to Kickstarter, what do they need to look for?
Kill Crazy Nympho's Attack.
God, it sounds like a regular weekend for me.
I mean, the title says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So, cool. Guys, I'm really looking forward to seeing this book.
Excellent.
And, yeah, so is there anything else that people should know about this before, you know? I mean, I want to tease them, but I don't want to please them.
Of course. Why stray from the formula?
Yeah.
We're going to have it up on Comixology. I believe you can buy physical copies of it off of BrokenIconComics.com.
And then, obviously, they could probably buy physical copies if they catch it at a con.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. We do most of our business at conventions for the physical stuff.
Fantastic.
For the physical stuff. God, I'm too drunk. Right.
There's no such thing.
Fun so, muscles.
Hey. fun muscles, teasing, no pleasing.
Yeah.
And
we can pull a few taglines from this one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'll give you one little advice on being too drunk.
Okay.
My grandfather always said, you're never drunk until you're holding onto the grass to keep from falling off the edge of the earth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I've
not been there yet, so I think I'm okay.
I've been close.
Yeah?
I've been close. But, yeah, not close enough tonight. So, all right, guys. So, Rob, where can people find you online to take a peek at your stuff?
RobDumoArt.com. That's my website.
All right. And you're Rob Dumo on Twitter. I know that.
Exactly.
And James?
James C. Maddox at Twitter and pretty much anything else. And then JamesMaddox.net is my personal site, BrokenIconComics.com. I'm all over the place. All
right, guys, go check these guys out. James has been a fan for a number of years. Rob, I've seen your work and I've known of you for a number of years, too. So cannot wait to read this book myself. So, all right, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Well, we're now here with Miss Jenny Friesen. Jenny, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm getting there. I'm going to live through this day, I'm sure.
It's the last day of the con. You know, everybody's starting to wind down a little bit. Maybe I know I had a lot of fun last night.
Yeah, I had a little too much fun.
Yeah.
I was overserved by a very irresponsible bartender. It's all his fault and none of mine.
Well, I have to take my own responsibility on mine because I just kept going up and asking for more. But so, Jenny, I've known about your work for probably 4-ish years now. And I mean, you're known for your covers. And so kind of fill people in a little bit about, you know, the books that you're doing covers on and stuff in case they don't know who you are just by name.
Okay. I am the current ongoing cover artist for Revival, which is an Image book written by Tim Seeley and drawn by Mike Norton. I am doing covers for Red Sonja and Vampirella, and then I do lots of one-offs. You've probably seen my work in the past on Angel and Spike, Buffy products, and
Spider-Gwen, which was just, you know.
Yeah, I did a Spider-Gwen cover. I've done covers for, I don't know, all kinds of stuff.
So when it comes to doing covers, you know, how much freedom do you have? I mean, do they tell you what the story's going to be? Or?
Yeah, it depends. Like, for example, the Red Sonja and Vampirella books, I had 100% freedom. Like, they just were like, draw whatever you want, and you know, every month I would draw whatever I wanted. For more story-centric books like Image or Revival, every month Tim tries to figure out what the book's about that month, and usually it's sort of a mystery. Like, I mean, not what the book is about is a mystery, but the book itself is a mystery story. So he knows what the story arc is about, but not necessarily how it's broken down for each issue. And side note, covers are done in advance of the books because they need to be in the solicitation catalog so that retailers can order them. So very often they're done, I mean, they're always done months before the book comes out, but sometimes they're done so far in advance that they're not actually written yet. So for example, with Revival, Tim will know what is going to happen in the story, but not necessarily the issue breakdown. So he usually, like, will say it's due on a Monday. Come Friday, he tries to figure it out while I'm yelling at him going, I have to do this on Monday. But so, you know, long story short, I get any number of, anywhere in the spectrum of total freedom to an exact request of, here's where I want the characters to be and here's what I want the cover to be about. So.
Yeah. And what made you want to focus just on covers and not doing sequential art or inside the book?
Well, I guess I don't know. I always say that sequential and cover art have all of the same percentage or all of the same things involved, but in different percentages. And I just like the percentages. The things that I like most about art are in higher percentages on cover. So design and color and layout is more important. When you come with sequentials, it's all about storytelling. And I just love all of the other parts more.
So you're doing your own colors and everything then?
Yep, I do. I do the whole thing from start to finish myself.
When you're normally doing a cover, I mean, is it pencils? Do you use brushes as well or markers? What?
I have a process that I've come up with, and I say is built for speed. But I do the pencils on white paper, like every other normal human. And then I print that out on a gray tone paper, and I use markers and chalk, graphite, paint, and I do all the rendering by hand, traditionally. I scan that in, and I color that digitally. So all of the rendering is done traditionally, and then the colors themselves are Photoshop.
Nice. Now, are there some books out there that you're just praying you're going to get to draw?
That's a good question. I will say one of the first jobs that I ever got was a Vampirella cover, and I've always loved Vampirella. I love Pepe Gonzalez, you know, the original, I believe the original artist, like, that is some of my most favorite art, and ever since I did that first Vampirella cover, I was always hoping I could do more, because I really love, like, just all of the things that you can do with that imagery. So I would have said Vampirella. And then I got to do many more Vampirella covers, which was a dream. And I'm really into comics because I grew up loving Wonder Woman so much.
Okay.
And I just did a Wonder Woman cover for the Sensational Comics, or Sensation. Sensation. What is the name of the Wonder Woman digital book?
Oh.
So I think it's Sensation Comics.
Yeah, I don't know. I know what you're talking about.
Sorry, my brain's not working today.
Yeah.
But so I just did a cover for that, which was a total dream and far too much responsibility, I felt, to, in one image, say everything that I loved about this character. But so I kind of feel like I'm getting to do all of the things that I ever wanted to do, so I need to come up with new things that I'm dying to do.
How long does it normally take you to do a cover?
It depends. I always say it takes me exactly as long as I have. If I have 12 hours, it takes 12 hours. If I have 2 weeks, it takes 2 weeks.
So, where can people find your stuff online to go and check it out? I mean, you can just walk through the comic shop and seeing all your covers floating around out there.
I'm really bad at putting my stuff out there, but I have a website, which is jennyfrizen.com, which I update like once every 2 years. and then that's pretty much it. That's all that I do. It's there. It exists on Google.
Okay.
Use Google.
Cool. One other question I have, because your art, you definitely have a signature style. I mean, I walk in and I'm like, that's one of Jenny's covers. I mean, it's gorgeous. Who do you use, or do you use models for?
If I use photo reference, I usually use myself, just because, well, I should say, not necessarily for the bodies, but I use myself and whoever is around me for whatever's free, whatever is like the closest human in proximity to me is who I use. So.
I'm actually glad you said that, because there's definitely a resemblance in the eyes from you to a lot of
characters. I think that is probably more, and I always say this, I understand the mechanics of how my face works. So even if I'm not looking at my face, when I'm drawing a face, I'm like, that's what makes most sense to me. So I think everybody does that in their own way. They draw themselves because, you know, that's what they see when they look in the mirror. That's just how they understand a face.
Well, gorgeous work. We love it. And
yeah, people go check out Jenny's stuff. And
in 2 years, you might see what she's put up now.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
And that does it for all the interviews that we did on the convention floor. However, later this week, we will have our favorite segment that we do after every convention, our drunk interviews. So stay tuned for that. Cheers.